Hey, everybody. Before we get to the show today, I want to talk about a couple of advertisers here that are supporting the show. You've heard me talk for the last several shows about Fox and Hound. So if you go to shopfoxandhound.com, you're going to see all the products that Fox and Hound has. And like I've mentioned, obviously their bread and butter for their business is going to be pet dogs. But this is a company that supports what we do. So they want to help us through the Fox and Hound Foundation. And when you buy stuff at Fox and Hound for your dog, even if it's your pet dog, you're supporting other police dogs. So the Fox and Hound Foundation is doing a lot of really good stuff. And when you go to shopfoxandhound.com, you click the give back mission and you'll see some of the stuff they're doing for our dogs, for the police dogs. So I think it's a great company. They really do support police dogs and support what we do. And some of their products, I've mentioned their kennel cleaner quite a few times. They also have a pad protection. So I just saw recently on a forum, somebody was asking about a dog with slick floor problems. Sometimes getting the dog's pads a little bit softer will make the pads on their feet a little bit stickier. And some dogs will feel a little bit better when their pads aren't all calloused over and they're on those types of floors. So it's just something to think about. And they do sell a good pad protection there at Fox and Hound. So a lot of products on there, the shampoo and everything else that definitely will work for our dogs and make your dogs look a little bit better. And maybe if it's the pad protection, it might even help them walk on slick floors a little bit better. But again, it's a company that I really support because they support us. So shopfoxandhound.com, check them out. Also, I'd like to talk about Trace ID real quick. You've heard me talk about them the last couple episodes too. They have a wipe that you can check different areas for both narcotics and explosives. So it'll check for, you know, trace amounts. That's hence the name Trace ID. And they spell it Trace ID, and it's Trace EYE hyphen D, Trace ID. It's a real cool product. So if you search a car or something, don't come up with anything, you could take one of the wipes and check some different parts of the car, and it'll just confirm that there is, you know, there's been drugs in this car, and it's a scientifically proven fact. It'll just help your training records. Same with explosives. If you need to double check something when you're out doing a search or whatever, you can use one of their explosive wipes. So if you go to their website, and it's trace-eye-d.com. So Trace ID with the dashes, traceid.com. Go to their website, and between now and April 15th, they're offering a chance for you to get their product in a free sample. So when you go to the website, put in the code for the podcast, PK9TP, so Police Canine Training Podcast. Put that in and you'll get a free sample. So do that before April 15th. No cost to you. You don't have to write a letter through your department or anything, and get a free sample sent to you. And then you can see if it's a product you like and you want to maybe pitch to your bosses about starting to stock it. I think it's a cool product. So they've demoed it for me. Check it out, traceid.com.
This is the Police Canine Training Podcast with Jeff Meyer. Join us for each episode to get real-world advice from canine professionals who have experience on the street. Each episode will focus on up-to-date information that you can use on the street. Spend about 30 minutes with us each week as part of your training day. Our goal at Police Canine Training is to make every canine team be the best they can be.
Welcome to the Police Canine Training Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Meyer. Today, I don't have any guests with me. It's just going to be me. But I'm going to answer a question that I've gotten in a few different formats recently, and I've talked about it to people over the years quite a few times. And it's training days. You know, if you have a training day, how do you structure a training day? What do you do to make the most valuable use of your time on a training day? And just some ideas about training days. So first off, you know, should you have a training day or not? Now, if you are an agency where you have a dedicated canine unit and all you have to do is train dogs and respond to calls and you all work the same shift, then maybe you don't need a training day. You have the ability to just not answer calls for a little while and go train as a group together. What that takes, though, is some discipline. So I've been in both where we had training days and then we were in a period of time where the training days became inefficient. I'm going to talk about how that happens to a lot of units. So they became so inefficient that we just decided to train on duty. And we had that ability because we were a dedicated canine unit. So it was easy for us if there was no you know, canine stuff going on that we could go as a group and find a place in the city and train for a couple hours. And it was a pretty efficient way to do it because we could get a lot done and we were doing it in a short period of time. But most people don't have that ability. Most everybody, I understand, you know, you have other duties, you're answering radio calls, you're doing other stuff, and you just don't have the ability to just basically turn the radio down. And we had a canine channel, we could listen to just that. And if they needed a dog, they'd call us on just that channel. I understand that's, you know, a very good luxury that a lot of people don't have. So most people have training days. And when I talk to people over the across the country, one of the universal things is that a lot of times training days are not very efficient. So it depends on how things are structured. I'd say a very common training day is on a Wednesday because that's an overlap day based on, you know, 10-hour schedules or 12-hour schedules. But a lot of people, you know, if you use Wednesday for an example, it's a training day. And if you're running two shifts, you have some type of day shift and some type of night shift, then you want to get everybody together. So then those hours have to kind of merge into something. And that starts on the training day. That usually will start, you know, sometime a little bit earlier for the night shift guys and a little bit later for the day shift guys, some type of compromise. And that day usually is going to be the day's dedicated to training. Now, I've heard a lot of different things where the training day is a little bit shorter and then the people get a leave earlier that day to take care of to compensate them for their dog care. I'm not a big fan of that. I think a training day should be a dedicated day. How many days should you have in a month? That's really kind of schedule dependent. You know, if you have the luxury of having four training days a month, then by all means, I would say have four training days a month. It's excellent use of your time. Keep all your dogs up and train better, and gives you more time to go out and do scenario-based training when you're not having to struggle with the basic skills. But we'll get to more of that in just a little bit. But so basically, you know, should we have a training day or not? I think, you know, again, unless you're one of those unusual agencies that everybody works the same shift and you don't have other duties, I think you should have scheduled training days. And ideally, it should be a same day every month, or every week, I'm sorry. And there should be four every month. So you're getting plenty of training time. So once you've decided you're definitely going to have training days, what's the next step? How are they going to be structured? So the first thing that for most of you, when you listen to it, it's the way it works, is your supervisor is going to be involved. But I can tell you from traveling around the country and talking to a lot of people, there's an amazing number of so-called canine supervisors that never go to a training day. So if you're a canine supervisor, go to your training days. I just don't understand. I know that there are some canine supervisors who have a lot of different duties. So maybe you can't go to every one of them. But if you, whatever your other duties are, your canine unit, if your title is canine supervisor, I can almost argue with you that every other duty that is assigned to you in the department does not hold the amount of liability to you through vicarious liability as being a canine supervisor. So going to a training day as a canine supervisor should be very, very high up on your list. That does a couple things. You can help structure the day because the supervisor's there. There's most cool, one of the cool things I've always found about canine handlers is that you could put 250 canine handlers out on a field during a training day without one sergeant or command officer anywhere in the zip code. And out of that 250, 240 of them would work all day long because we love what we do. So we don't need a supervisor to come and motivate us how to do it or whatever. But a supervisor can provide basically the support and maybe some of the administration stuff. So if a supervisor is going to a training day every day, when they start getting pushback that, hey, these guys have too many training days, that supervisor should be able to say, no, we go to those training days and here's all the stuff we do. Here's what we're working on. Here's why it's beneficial. And the supervisor should be heavily invested, not in just the title of canine supervisor. He should be invested in the performance of all the people under him. And that starts with going to training days, supporting the guys, seeing the equipment needs they might have. There's just so many different things. So I've seen a lot of canine supervisors, if they work a dog, then obviously they go to the training days. But I've seen a lot that don't work dogs. And whether a canine supervisor should work a dog or not might be a whole nother show. We could talk about that. But If you're a canine supervisor and you don't work a dog, your duties still should include going to the training day. And when you're at the training day, you know, you don't just stand around and talk to the guys about other stuff. You should be heavily involved in what you're doing. You are a canine supervisor. So you should understand, you know, how they train, talk to the trainers, figure out what's going on, ask some questions, understand what the expectations are for the dogs to certify, ask the trainers and the handlers, you know, how do you get from point A to point B? Look at the dogs. Are all the dogs on the same plane? Is one dog struggling a lot? And as a supervisor, then you can start figuring out, is it because of the dog, or is it a handler, or is it a training issue or an attitude issue? You won't know any of that if you don't go to a training day. So it's amazing how many training or canine supervisors don't go to training, or if they do, they're not involved. So as a canine supervisor, you should understand what your guys do, how they get there. You should understand the mechanics of training. Doesn't mean you have to be an expert. Doesn't mean you have to go out and become a trainer. It just means you should understand what they're doing. And the trainers, as a unit trainer, if you're one of them, you should be able to explain in a very comprehensive way to your sergeant how you're training, what you're doing, what the goals are of the training. So training supervisors go to training days. It's as simple as that. But again, I guarantee you there's some guys who are listening to this that are laughing because their sergeants never, ever go to their training days. So when you're there as a sergeant, be involved. You know, besides learning how they train and what they do and everything, put the suit on, decoy a little bit, learn how to catch dogs. You can help so much in the training day by becoming a good decoy. When you're involved as a decoy, as those of us that are handlers, and again, I'm speaking to supervisors, those of us that are handlers know that decoy is the most important part of the training. So when you're lucky enough to get a supervisor, even if they don't handle a dog, that is invested and will put a suit on and learn how to decoy correctly and help out with all the training, then you've got one more extra decoy on your training day. And that sergeant then gets to see all the dogs, gets to catch the dogs, gets to understand how the dogs are working, and gets the sergeant or supervisor, whatever title, corporal, sergeant, they're involved. So the sergeants that I, or supervisors that I do talk to that do go to training, the next thing I ask them is, how often do you put a suit on and catch dogs? And a lot of times I get a laugh, and it's like an absurd question. But the units that I go to, and I see that the units are functioning, you know, at a higher level and everybody's working a little bit better, those are usually the units where the supervisors are heavily involved, whether they work a dog or not. And they're supporting their guys by coming to training and, you know, being involved and decoying and helping out and actually participating, not just standing on the side. When you're a handler and you have a supervisor who just wants to stand back, you almost feel like you're under a microscope and that person is just judging you and trying to figure out if you're doing a good job or not and not actually involved. And as a handler, you start to think, you know, the person never gets involved. He doesn't know if I'm doing a good job or not. So then it becomes a personality thing. You know, if the sergeant likes some people, they do a better job because of the personality. So if you're a supervisor, I'll stop here. But the bottom line is go to training days and participate in training days. Enough said on that, but it's worth repeating. So what hours should the training days be? You know, if figure out your common day, the day that the schedules are a little fat with bodies, if you're all assigned to a patrol part of function, then, you know, what will your command be able to let you go off? So ideally it'd be every week on a steady day. That is impossible. So for many agencies, it's just not possible, especially now. I understand, you know, every single agency right now is struggling with staffing. So these training days should be important, but it's not the hill to die on where, you know, if your command says, you know, we're bleeding bodies here, we can't even staff our patrol shift. And then you start demanding, well, every Wednesday, we're going to be gone for 10 hours and we're going to take the whole unit. When you start doing stuff like that, then you start seeing canine units get reduced or go away. So you have to be flexible with the senior command as to how the training day is going to function, what the hours are going to be, how often, whatever. Ideally, like I said, if you could do every week, that's great. I know a lot of agencies right now are doing it twice a month. If you can only train twice a month, that's okay. Just make the best of that time. So you're going to have to work with the command, figure out a schedule, figure out what day everybody's going to train on, and then figure out the hours. A while back, I was doing a review of an agency, and part of the review that was, it was not asked for as part, they had different things they wanted us to specifically look at that the commands had concerns about with the agency. But one of the things was not training days. But as we talked to every handler individually, all of a sudden the training days became a huge issue. And what it was they had a supervisor who was very involved, but he was also, as a supervisor, was trying to accommodate everybody's hours on that training day. So they had a weekly training day, but the hours weren't the same. So, and it, what it was the supervisor was just trying to help out all of his guys. But it had turned into, on the training day, some people came in at 10, some people came in at 1, some people came in at 2:45 after they picked the kids up from school. And it was kind of almost set your own hours on the training day kind of thing. And the training days really lasted from 10 a.m. to almost 10 p.m. And everybody worked a portion of those hours somewhere in the in between. And they had a little bit of overlap. There was no continuity. They couldn't really get going on the training when they would, you know, then, and the trainer worked different hours than some of the handlers. While it was well-intentioned by the supervisor, it was a big point of contention for all of the handlers. And they were like, it just feels like a wasted day to us because we're not actually training as a unit. So when we pointed that out, it was an easy fix. They picked a time and that became the training. Everybody shows up this day. Which, of course, you know, could be a bit of a burden for some people, you know, because you've got childcare and you've got a life outside there. But, you know, it's part of our job. And everybody who took this job as a handler, you know, understood there was going to be some flexibility needed. So with advance notice and start scheduling at a certain time and, you know, maybe work out with everybody what time is going to work for everybody, those hours should be set. And with some flexibility, maybe you have a new training venue or something going on where, you know, the whole unit's going to switch the hours that day. But basically, my point of all this is that a training day should be set. If you can get it every week, that's great. At least every other week is, I would say, the minimum. And then those hours should be set at a time. And the whole bureau, all the handlers are going to work those hours, get everybody together. Because especially if you have a two or three shifts or people working different sides of the week, that training day is going to be the day that you can put everybody together. Everybody can kind of talk about what's going on, some of their deployments, good or bad, be in a real honest forum about what they want to work on that day, as opposed to having, you know, a day shift versus night shift or first part of the week versus second part of the week. You know, we get little clicks. The training day should be a time where everybody gets together and remembers that you're one solid unit and have that camaraderie start, you know, from the roll call that day. Spend a little bit of time talking about what's going on. Catch up if you're working with people that you don't get to see, you know, for if it's been 2 weeks since your last training day. Check on some deployments and maybe some detector dog finds, whatever you need to catch up on. But check in with everybody. And that, again, should be ran kind of by the supervisor. So pick a day and pick the hours and then stick to it. And then once you've done that and you've got your training schedule, a training day is a training day. A training day is not the day that you go and get your car worked on or an admin day where you're going to go get your radio fixed or go pick up uniforms across town and show up 2 hours late. And everybody that works in a training group knows that there's always somebody who always has something to go going on that training day, and they put in half the time that everybody else does. Then when certification rolls around, then all of a sudden they're panicked and they want you to help them with their dog and certify. So again, supervisors, trainers, you know, hold people accountable. If you're fortunate enough to have a set in stone training day with training times, then the expectation should be that that's not a day that you take off to go and do something else. Or, you know, I mean, things come up and we all understand that, but it's not just a free day that you can make it when you can and then go do administration stuff because, you know, you work nights and now you're working at noon that day. So you get to go do some admin stuff or set vet appointments or whatever. That's not a training day. So training day should start on a scheduled day, a scheduled time, and have a roll call with all the handlers and supervisors present and go over that day, you know, catch up from the last time you had met, go over any new issues, department issues, schedules, upcoming events, whatever, deployments, you know, if there's been any significant deployments, sit there and talk about them as a group. That way, again, sometimes you get, you know, day shift and night shift or other clicks. Maybe somebody heard about a deployment, but they didn't get all the facts. So explain everything. And if there's been a failure in a deployment, a dog didn't bite or you missed some dope or something, this is the time to sit down and talk about it. And the handler should explain, you know, here's what happened. Here's what the dog did. Here's what I did. Here's what I think the mistake was. And then as a group, that's going to be a focus part of your training day, is to recreate that scenario, see if any other dogs have that problem and work through it. Here's an example. One time in we were searching a house. It was a barricade. We knew the suspect was in this house. We had contact with him and we finally made entry. We were going through the house nice and slow, and my dog started working closet. Well, when we looked in the closet, straight up above in the closet was an attic space. Well, the dog started working the closet, and this was a closet where these people, I don't think, had ever heard of the thing that we all call hangers. So they just threw all of their clothes in a pile in the closet. This is a pile of clothes that was probably 4 or 5 feet tall, just dirty, filthy clothes. Everybody's been in those kind of houses. And I think they shoplifted clothes, and then when they were done wearing them, they just threw them in this closet. So my dog went in and he went up on this pile of clothes. And then right away, one of the SWAT guys saw the attic open. In my mind, all right, the guy's in the attic. So the dog keeps working. He worked the pile of clothes a little bit, but not a ton, and didn't really try to dig through the pile of clothes, you know, nothing. So the decision was made, we needed to get up into the attic, and we cleared the rest of the house. Dog kept working the closet a whole lot. When they wanted to put a ladder in the attic, they needed to move the clothes. So they started pulling the clothes out while they covered the attic hole. As they were pulling the clothes out, lo and behold, they see this suspect's foot in this pile of clothes. Now, before that day, I would have said all day long that if somebody was in a pile of clothes, that my dog would have went straight in, dug through all the clothes, and bit him. And this was a dog that had many, many street finds and apprehensions. So biting wasn't an issue with this dog. But the way the clothes were, they were packed onto this guy so heavy and he was down so much, the odor was in the closet, but definitely, you know, the whole closet was filled. And it wasn't like a reason for my dog to start digging through clothes. And in fact, you know, like a lot of dogs, my dog at times, you know, would bite, you know, couches or whatever out of frustration. And we had worked on not letting him bite things. So, you know, the training we had done would discourage him from just tearing through a bunch of clothes. And we had never, ever set up a training scenario where we had somebody under a huge pile of clothes and let the dog go work it. My dog obviously didn't work him correctly, saw the guy's leg, then we challenged him, the guy gave up. So right away on the next training day, the first thing we did is we went to a school, we found where the lost and found was, and they had boxes and boxes of clothes. We put decoys under clothes out in the open, and we put them in closets, and we did it in a muzzle hide because our dogs would work well in muzzle. And lo and behold, most of our dogs had a difficult time working a huge pile of clothes. So it was me who had to explain to the SWAT guys why my dog didn't crawl through the clothes and bite this guy. But by going and being honest and open and saying, hey, you know what, it wasn't a good deployment in a lot of ways, because I wish my dog would have just, you know, found the guy instead of a SWAT guy seeing his foot. But by explaining what happened and being open about it, and when we set up our training, all of our dogs ended up learning to work through that. And it was a different scent picture for the dogs and a different picture for the dogs. Once they started seeing that, it wasn't a problem. And over the next few years, we had several finds, you know, of people wrapped up in blankets, on beds, different finds. And once the dog saw it, it just got better and better. So that's just an example of, you know, when you go to your training day, talk about, you know, any good or bad deployments, and go over it and then start setting those up for scenarios and make all the dogs better. So next, you know, once you've got your training day set up and what you're going to do, who sets up the training? So in general, I think trainers should set up the training. Obviously, it sounds obvious, but Then again, you know, the flip side of having supervisors involved is I've had some instances where supervisors wanted to set up and dictate a lot of the training, but they weren't trainers. So they really didn't have the expertise to do it, but they had the title that would allow them to say, here's what we're going to work on today. That would kind of cause some friction. So the trainers should be the ones who set up the training. And that should be based on needs of the unit. It should be based on, again, if you have had some deployments or any issues, if you're getting ready for a certification, if one of the dogs is struggling with something, then the trainer should know, you know, here's kind of what I want to work on today. And then obviously a supervisor might say, hey, you know, last time, here's some things I saw, so I want to make sure today I see, you know, good clean releases from everybody, for example, or something. So the supervisor definitely would have input. But the trainers should be the ones who are kind of setting up and figuring out what you're going to do that day. I would look at a trainer there, you know, as like a an assistant coach, the one who, you know, they're going to take, you know, some of the guys off and work on certain skills on one side of the field and really work on it. Those are the guys, the trainers are the ones who know the mechanics and what, you know, what we need to work on as a team. So trainers would set it up. But the bottom line is, when you ask the question, who sets up the training, it should be everyone. So even if I'm a brand new handler and I've only been there for 3 or 4 months, I should recognize what my dog needs, and I should be able to go to the trainer and say, hey, next training day, I want to work on tracking, or I want to work on this, I want to work on that, and kind of bring something to the table. So everybody should be involved in what are we going to do that day. The trainers, as you know, you have the title of trainer, you should be the one who's ready to kind of set up the training and dictate kind of how we're going to train that day, what, you know, what order we're going to do things in. So when you're setting up the training, and again, everybody's involved in it, there's, in my mind, there's basically two types of training on these training days. There's skills and there's scenarios. So I think a good structured training day is everybody should look at the skills that we want to work on that day. And we should be working on basic skills. So say, it, for example, if you're doing patrol stuff and you want to work releases, then set up, you know, some basic stuff that you think back to when you first taught your dog to release a bite off a decoy. How did you do that? And run through and do those basic drills. You know, if you watch spring training with baseball, those guys are out on the field fielding, you know, very slow grounders at first, and they're just working on the real basics and the mechanics. So we should all think about, you know, doing our training days as basically like a sport, and setting up some basic stuff at the beginning of the day just to kind of get everybody up and moving and limber and get the dog's minds ready for that training day, and just do some basics, you know, whatever it is, do some basic obedience, do some group obedience, do some just basic skills. And that's something where the trainers should, you know, kind of have some ideas of what we're going to do. You know, we used to do some line obedience and different obedience, you know, as a group, and work on some bite stuff. And when you're doing that stuff, the idea is that you're working on the basic skills, you're keeping those skills up and very sharp, and you're also making sure that everybody's on the same level. So using the release for as an example, if we're going to run 10 dogs today, and as we're going through, one or two of the dogs just do not want to release, then that's a time where we're going to stop and we're going to work release with those dogs, and we're going to get everybody on that basic skill level. So, you know, any chain is as good as its weakest link. And if you have a bad team going out there, they're going to represent your canine unit. So this is a time where you bring everybody up to that same basic level. There's always going to be a difference in skills and ability from handlers and trainers and dogs, but everybody should have that same basic level and be able to do the basics very, very well. So start your training day just doing some basics, doing something, you know, where you're working. If you're working on detection stuff, this is a time where you're going to do some basic hides, work on some different odors maybe you haven't put out, and a lot of those are going to be known hides. We're working on skills. We're working on the dog doing a search pattern at that time. We're working on different stuff like that. We're not testing the dog. So if it's an unknown, if I put something out and have you come and search it, then that's just testing you and the dog, and we're not actually training. So think about when you're doing whatever, if it's, you know, whether it's patrol, detection, tracking, whatever skill you're working on, you know, ask yourself, am I actually training? Am I doing, you know, skill building here, or am I testing? And if you're testing in this part of the day, It's just not what you should be doing. You should be working on just basic skills. And I like to get all those critical skills down, work through them. I do a lot of e-collar stuff. If you've been in one of my e-collar classes, you know that you'd probably have a definitely do an exercise where you're going to have everybody out on the field doing a whole lot of stuff together, work all the critical skills at once, get everything up and running. And then for the next part of the day, you know, a lot of times maybe people break for lunch or whatever. Then the next part of the day, we're going to do scenarios. And our industry definitely needs more stress type scenario training, stuff where handlers need to make decisions, dogs are under stress, handlers are under stress. So if your critical skills are up and they're working really well, this is a time where you can set up, you know, a couple of nice, you know, well thought out scenarios. And everybody should have a part in setting up scenarios. So the first way that that happens is that when you're driving around your city, you should always be looking at, you know, the empty buildings or the buildings that are for sale or businesses that you talk to and try and find different venues that you can go to. So I had lots of luck over the years just calling realtors when I saw their signs up on buildings and say, tell them, hey, you know, it's good for you because you'll have cops in your building. We get to use the building. Cops will be coming and going, you know, late at night. So we always had lots of keys to different buildings that we could get in and out of. I've seen a lot of agencies that print up signs from they go to their sign department in their city and just says, you know, this business is used at different hours for, you know, by X department canine unit, you know, so don't break in basically. But it shows the community that, you know, from the sign in the window, that one, there's going to be police dogs in and out of there. So it's a deterrent. And it also is a matter of pride for a lot of these businesses that it shows that they're supporting the department. I've seen several agencies who maybe they have five or six of those signs. And once they get them out in the community, then they have businesses start calling saying, hey, how can I get a canine sign on my window? And they have a policy and they have them sign a release where, you know, if they damage something, they'll fix it, but they're not going to get, you know, the department's not going to get sued, you know, those types of different issues. And then I've seen several agencies that have a waiting list for a department, for a company to come on and get that. So when they sign up, they'll tell them, hey, we're going to use your building for 3 months and then we're going to move on. And, you know, part of it is that we get a key and alarm code so we can get in late at night and use your building and then leave. And no one even knows they're there other than, you know, the dogs and stuff. So it works really well. But everybody should be out there, everybody in the unit should be out there trying to find training venues. When you have a lot of great training venues, then all of a sudden your scenarios get better. So the scenarios should be set up by everybody in the unit. Everybody should be thinking of scenarios, and these should be worked on, you know, on your training day. And the idea of the scenario should be to challenge the handler, or challenge the dog, challenge both. But they shouldn't be, you know, everybody loses scenarios, and it shouldn't be a competition to where I know that my dog will do really well on this, so I'm going to set up the scenario to make everybody else look bad because my dog does well. Shouldn't be anything like that. It should be, you know, based on, you know, maybe you get a new business, you meet with the owner, you walk through it, and then you see just something unusual, you know, a weird hide, a weird place to put somebody, you know, set up something, then you can set it up and work everybody through it as a unknown hide, you know, in a scenario, let people work it. So everybody, you know, new handlers to the, you know, most senior handler is responsible for finding training venue and setting up scenarios. So if you have that, you know, we had a list actually, and we just wrote it down on our calendar, and we knew, you know, that even though I was one of the trainers, it went through the whole, everybody on the roster had to set up scenarios and figure out where we were going to go. And we would do that. We'd pick a day and we'd know, you know, that Tuesday night at midnight, we're meeting here. If we don't have anything else going on, we're going to meet here because one of the handlers had a new building and they would go in, set everything up. And then we get to go run new stuff. So it should be a fun and enjoyable and challenging thing to do scenarios and do them in new areas. So wrapping it all up, I just mentioned it, that a training day should be fun. I mean, you should enjoy your training day. It should be a time of camaraderie first, you know, where you get to see people that you don't see maybe throughout the week. We all have a common interest. We're all dog handlers. We all are cops. We love what we do, and we love training dogs. So I know that naturally, you know, schedules and personalities will a lot of times form some cliques, But on the training day, that's a time we should remember that, man, we're all fortunate. We all get paid a bunch of money to go out and play with dogs. And then, you know, when we're not doing a training day, we get to go deploy our dogs on the street, either for patrol or detection or tracking, whatever it is we're doing. So the training day should be a really fun time where you, at the end of the training day, you should feel like, all right, we spent all of our time well, the department allocated, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours to us today. And I feel like, you know, we really did the best we could on that. And again, of course, we're government employees, so we're going to take a lunch and a break and all that stuff. But when we look back, we should think, you know, that we, you know, the dogs are a little bit better today than they were when we started. And, you know, we got some good scenarios in, caught up with everybody. And it shouldn't be something where you dread, oh, I got a training day. So the units, when I travel around and I meet lots of different agencies, the units that structure their training days, kind of what I'm describing, I can tell them when I first start dealing with them. They have a different attitude. When there's a lot of competition and a lot of dissension, those training days don't go as well. So it's frustrating when you work in a unit that has a lot of dissension and cliques and stuff. But I can tell you that starting to structure good training days can start build better camaraderie and get rid of some of that competition type aspect and just build into a very cohesive unit. So hopefully this is some food for thought for everybody. I get this question a lot about, you know, how should we schedule our training days and what should we do? So hopefully these are all some ideas for you. I just want to end up, you know, talking real quick about one of my other new sponsors. And Ray Allen. Ray Allen, everybody knows who Ray Allen is. They're based here out of Colorado. They make great canine equipment. And, you know, I don't need to say much more. I mean, if you've been a dog handler for any period of time, you know who Ray Allen is. But, you know, it's always good to go on their website, check out what they have new, anything you need, Ray Allen has. So one of the things I like to mention is a company like Ray Allen, they don't need my advertising on this podcast, but they come on here and they pay a little bit of money towards the cost of this podcast in order to support what I'm doing here, which is also to support you. So Ray Allen's a company that's supporting this podcast, and I appreciate it. Their quality of their items is fantastic. So check out rayallen.com. Ray Allen Manufacturing is probably the oldest company that has been dedicated towards canine equipment. So check out Ray Allen, and they're going to be the lead sponsor of our Colorado Canine Conference. Again, just another example of them just stepping up and supporting the cops. So everybody in Colorado and most of the handlers that are coming to the Colorado Canine Conference know about Ray Allen, but they're still going to step up and support us just because that's what they do. So it's a great company and you know, definitely partners with us. So check out Ray Allen. And as I mentioned, you know, the Colorado Canine Conference is coming. So check that out. We're going to have a lot of great instructors. It's at the end of July, ColoradoK9Conference.com. And finally, I've been talking a lot about Bob Eden. Bob's been around forever, and he's got his CATS Canine Activity Tracking Software Program. So KTS, CATSPlatinum.com. So if you've been around for any period of time, you've heard of Bob Eden, maybe read his books, seen him doing some training. And then most everybody's heard of CATS. So if you're not using CATS, you can get on there and get a free trial, see what all the different features and see if you like it. So his customer service is excellent, very responsive, really good program. So check out CATSPlatinum.com. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up. Hopefully a little bit of food for thought for you guys. If you have any questions or have a subject that you want me to talk about or people you want me to interview, just reach out to me. My email is in the show notes, as always. And this program today was based on a couple of emails I got, just people talking about training days and setting them up. So hopefully it helps everybody. You guys stay safe, and I will be back with you next week.